Welcome to another episode of Text to Task Simplifying Education. I am Gargi, and today we are joined by Dr. Kashif Raza, a researcher at the University of British Columbia. He offers expert insights into racial bias in English language teaching, how this affects teaching, and what it means for education. Thank you, Dr. Kashif Raza, for joining us on the podcast. First, let's start by addressing some common myths. What are some prevalent myths about native versus non-native speakers as TESOL teachers?
Well, there are multiple myths, but I chose to speak about probably the four common ones. So the first myth is who could be a native speaker? So for example, if you have been speaking English as your first language from childhood, but you originate from a country that is not recognized as an English-speaking country, can you be categorized as a native speaker? So unfortunately in the field, the native speakerism has not only been associated with your ability to speak English as your first language, but also the geographical location where you come from, the color of your skin, the educational background. So all of those somehow intersect to create that myth of who could be a native speaker and a non-native speaker. The second myth is the infallibility myth, that if you are a native speaker of a language, let's say English, you do not have kind of the fault of making a mistake. So you are perfect. Whatever you do will become a creation. So you're basically adding to the language. You're not making any mistakes in terms of the language and the grammar use. The third one is that somehow the ownership of the language is associated with when you're categorized as the native speaker. Means you will get to decide which way the language is going to progress. That myth is slowly being dismantled and being confronted with scholarship focusing on the different varieties of Englishes in the form of world Englishes. So we see an entire line of research being produced in that area that confronts this myth that only native speakers are the masters of the language. And finally, what relates to teaching or the teaching context is that if you're a native speaker, you don't always have to put a lot of effort into learning how to teach that language. If you just have a master's degree or maybe lower than that, you could be a language teacher of the language that you're a native speaker of. For example, in the field of English language teaching, I've seen people who have undergraduate degrees or graduate degrees, but they're somehow promoted to higher positions just because they're native speakers of the language or are recognized as native speakers of language. So these are some of the myths that surround this whole notion of native versus non-native speakers.
Following that, can you give examples or reference studies that show bias in favor of native speakers in TESOL jobs?
Yeah, so when I got the list of questions, I went through my own reading list. So I've selected four readings that I would like to bring to the reader's attention. The first reading is a paper that I published with Dr. Zohra Aslami from Texas A&M University in the US. So this was a recent publication in TESOL Journal entitled Intersectional Lens to the Study of Racism in TESOL Leadership. What we tried to do in that paper was to document the racist ideologies faced by a non-native brown TESOL leader from an Iranian and Persian background. So unfortunately, there has not been a lot of research on leaders because there is this understanding that once you're a leader, you are less victim to racism. So we tried to confront that misunderstanding through this paper by saying, no, you could still be facing racism in different forms, and that racism could actually be very high level. That can cost you your job, that can cost you your career. So what we did in that paper was took an intersectional lens to the study of racism, where we invited readers to look at factors such as faith, religion, gender, color, your native, non-native background, and all how all these intersect with each other to shape racism. So that's a very good paper that readers should read to see how racism can impact ATISO leadership. The other paper that we had published in our first volume, I got a copy of the volume, Policy Development in TESOL and Multilingualism. There is a chapter by Chen, Lin, and Huang. They take Bourgeois's approach to study the relationship that is developed between native and non-native speakers in the educational context and how the ideologies of native speakerism impact the type of relationship you develop. For example, they highlight symbolic violence that is faced by non-native speakers that doesn't always originate from native speakers, but that could originate from non-native speakers towards non-native speakers. For example, I got a quote from their chapter. So this is a non-native speaker speaking about their colleague, who is also a non-native speaker from Sweden. It reads as, "I do not learn much from my co-teacher. She is from Sweden, not really a native speaker, though she did her bachelor's degree in the US. Neither is she very good at teaching, so I do not think I learn a lot." So this is a context where two teachers are speaking about co-teaching and co-learning, and this non-native colleague thinks that her non-native colleague is not teaching her much because of her non-native background. So you could see how native speakerism ideologies are attached and you know, they impact at different levels. The third paper I want to talk about is by Duran and Sinkum. They talk about, this was published in 2022, they talk about English language learners who perceive their non-native English language teachers more as English learners rather than teachers. So you could have a master's degree and you could have, you know, years of experience, but you're still seen as a learner of the language rather than a teacher or a master of the language by your own students who are also non-native speakers. So you could see the way it impacts the perceptions about teachers who are non-native. And finally, my recent paper that I will speak about in more detail later, about issues of legitimization, authority, and acceptance. That was published in this volume, Language Teacher Identity, by Sylvia and a very good colleague, Vander. I don't know if you could see the title. So in this chapter, I talk about the non-native speakerism and how the categorization of a teacher as a non-native speaker impacts the way a teacher is seen in the classroom and the relationship a parent builds with that teacher. So this is a story of a Pakistani English language teacher who works in a kindergarten school in Qatar, and a student of mine had her daughter going to the same kindergarten school. So she comes to me with a complaint saying that she doesn't want her daughter to develop the accent of a Pakistani Indian teacher because she thinks the accent is very heavy. So she's worried that this accent, the teacher's accent may have an impact on her daughter's accent. When she realized that I was also a Pakistani that she was speaking with. But when I asked, "Do you not feel uncomfortable yourself because you are a student of a Pakistani but you don't want your daughter to go to a Pakistani teacher?" So she categorized me as being different. I sound different. My accent is different. My education is different. So I took it as an opportunity to confront those ideologies of native speakerism and non-native speaker and how they could become the basis of racism and discrimination against non-native speakers. I'll stop here with the chapter, but I'll come back to this chapter when I respond to your other questions. So, but these are four readings I suggest that provide some background about the ways the split between native and non-native speakerism or the binary in native and non-native speakerism impacts the employment of non-native speakers.
Next. How does the preference for native speakers affect the careers and lives of non-native English teachers?
Going back to the earlier response, I think it does impact in terms of their employment. So people struggle to get jobs. And and an impact of that is that a lot of non-native speakers continue to increase their credentials and qualifications by doing higher degrees, because they feel that that is one way they could create a balance between their categorization as non-native speaker versus the requirements of the job. So you would see a lot of non-native speakers with PhDs applying for jobs that are at master's level. I mean, it's not that native speakers don't do PhDs. It's just that non-native speakers somehow feel that one way they could compete against native speakers is by doing higher degrees and additional certifications. So it does impact in their employment, but it also impacts in their self-image, their self-learning, and their their view of their self as fallible speakers or teachers of a language, as teachers who are always seen as maybe less masters of a language, who are still in the learning stage, who speak English as their second or third language. So that default or maybe a faulted picture of the teacher impacts the confidence and the well-being of the teachers. And finally, relationship with other teachers and students. If you're categorized as a non-native speaker, you're not given the respect based upon your scholarship, your teaching experience, then you're not going to have a healthy relationship with your colleagues. So in these ways, I mean, it could impact their working style.
In light of this, what can schools and institutions do to reduce bias against non-native speakers in hiring and promotion?
I think there are two angles, two ways this could be addressed. The first is the legal actions that could be taken. These could be in the form of legislation, in the form of policies, in the form of guidelines for recruiters. For example, TESOL issued a position statement in 2006 that is titled as a statement against discrimination of non-native speakers of English in the field. So that statement clearly outlines that you cannot discriminate in terms of employment against people who are native or non-native speakers of the language, especially English. But we still see that in job advertisement, the term native speakerism is still visible in certain contexts, although many contexts have minused it from their advertisements, but you could still see it as part of recruitment. Even if they don't advertise it, you could still see a dismissal of non-native speakers just because of their accent or their language background. I was at TESOL convention in 2013 when I was hired to teach in Qatar. And I interviewed with a few recruiters from certain contexts. And I could see that although they didn't advertise it in their job advertisements, saying they have a preference for native speakers, during the interviews, I could observe myself how they clearly indicated that they have a preference for a native speaker to teach in this school. So if you don't have that background, the non-native speakers are still facing the challenges. So I believe the policies that we have put in place need to be implemented, and newer policies need to be created based upon the ways this split between native and non-native speakers is impacting the employment of non-native speakers. And then there's the ethical aspect where we as professionals who are recruiting teachers based upon their ability to teach rather than their ability to speak the language as native or non-native speakers, we have an ethical responsibility to not select people based upon their native or non-native background. We should select people based upon their ability to teach, their ability to engage students, their knowledge of language teaching, their interaction with research, and their potential to be great teachers. So that should take preference rather than the recognition as a native or non-native speaker.
Moving forward, how can non-native English teachers use their skills and experiences to challenge bias and improve their teaching?
So this is where I'm going to go back to my chapter that I published in that Language Teacher Identity book by Sylvia and Vander. In that book, I proposed three strategies or three ways a non-native teacher can confront native speaker ideologies and issues of racism and discrimination in the classroom. This was based upon my own experience working with students in Qatar for 8.5 years. So the first one, the first strategy that I propose is English as a lingua franca. So we need to increase awareness of students about what English is and different varieties of English. The way I did that in my work was I introduced students to different definitions of English. For example, English as an international language, English as a foreign language, English as a second language. So when they looked at those definitions, they learned the difference between what a language is and how it is learned and in what context it is learned and for what purposes it is learned. We looked at the context of Qatar, for example, where we discussed how a local variety of English is emerging in the context of Qatar, which is not a Qatari English, but it has some local version of it, where there is a mixture of Arabic, Hindi, Urdu, and other languages, Turkish, for example. So those words are being borrowed into that language to create a language of it, of itself. So students learned that English is not just spoken in these six, seven countries. It is spoken actually widely across the globe. And those varieties are much more deeper and stronger than the native varieties. And the native varieties are just imposed onto people who don't speak them as you know, native varieties. So speaking with students, introducing them to different varieties of English is a way forward to addressing the issue of native and non-native speakerism or racism in the field. The second way is a two-way multilingual turn. We've seen a lot of work being produced on the multilingual turn in the field where teachers and researchers are reporting how the languages of the prior languages of students could be used to develop English or how English can be used to develop other languages. But somehow the focus is restricted to learners only. What I proposed in my work was to stretch the field and make it a two-way multilingual turn. In two-way multilingual turn, teachers also highlight their linguistic repertoire in the classroom. They also talk about their ability to speak and use different languages and demonstrate that multilingual, translingual ability in the classroom during activities, during tasks. For example, I remember one of the tasks that I brought to the classroom where I brought a poem of the subcontinental poet Allama Iqbal. So the poem was written in Urdu. I displayed it in front of the class. We looked at the differences between the characters or alphabets of Arabic and Urdu, and we compared those. Then we also looked at the wording that was similar to other languages. For example, Urdu has a lot of vocabulary borrowed from Turkish and Persian. So students from that background were able to pick those up. We also looked at the similarities between Urdu and Hindi and how they're similar and different. So through this conversation, we were able to see that multilingual non-native speakers are able to speak different languages with a mastery that a monolingual speaker might not have. So displaying those qualities of the teachers in the classroom might project them differently than just being non-native speakers. So I believe the two-way multilingual turn would be beneficial to address this. And finally, the research that has been done in that particular context where we're addressing the issues of native speakerism and non-native speakerism. For example, in Qatar, my earlier work had looked at the preferences of students for different types of teachers. For example, if a teacher speaks in English with British accent or American accent versus a teacher who is just clear and understandable, what is the preference? The students preferred a teacher who is good teacher and is able to communicate easily. They did not have a preference for a native speaker or non-native speaker. They just had a preference for a good teacher. So this sort of research needs to be displayed in the classroom so the students can see what is being said. I believe these three strategies are a starting point. We need to add to them. We need to stretch them in our own ways. But I believe these are some ways to start the conversation in the classroom.
Lastly, what are some areas for future research on understanding, reporting, and confronting racism in TESOL?
So the paper that I did with Dr. Zohore, we highlighted the importance of taking intersectional lens to study racism and discrimination. That intersectional lens invites looking at factors that might not be visible, but they play a role in producing racism and displaying that towards non-native speakers or people of different skin colors, of different genders, of different races. For example, we highlighted that although the field of TESOL has a lot of female leaders, but there has not been research done on who these leaders are. Where do they originate from? Is it a specific group of female leaders who are benefiting from this movement or you know, the call for equal rights, or are others being dismissed? In our research, we reported that it is the case, at least with non-native speakers coming from Persian, Iranian background, especially when there is confrontation between America and Iran. So the issues of politics impact, the issues of religion impact, the issues of color and gender impact. When women leaders are sitting female leaders are sitting in a meeting, they are not heard with as much attention as a male leader. So those issues play a role in creating those discriminatory practices that impact the employment and the job of TESOL leaders. So the intersectional lens is very important to take to understand racism and confront it. The second is that there are newer versions and varieties of racism emerging that are not only impacted by these broader concepts of religion, gender, and color and native, non-native, but also, for example, the variety of language you speak. I speak Punjabi as my first, one of the languages that I speak from Pakistan. So I could see a lot of racism from Punjabi speakers towards other Punjabi speakers. I call it being racist towards your own kind, where your level of criticism is really high when you start pointing things towards your own, your core language speakers. The other day I came across a post on Facebook where somebody was talking about the problems that Punjabis have in general. For example, Punjabis are more into sports. They're not scientists. They're not doctors. They're more into, you know, working in the field. They're more into agriculture versus working with NASA and working with other space agencies. So you could see the way that harsh criticism is produced just because you feel that you are part of the group and you can criticize your own group. The person actually starts their description from this same sentence that since I'm a speaker of this language, I can criticize my own people. But would you criticize speakers of other language with same intensity and the same extremism? I'm not sure. So I think that is where we need to see the sort of racism and discrimination being produced and reported and confronted. And finally, there was a literature review done by Ali Fouad Selvi, Badruddin Yazan, and Ahmed Mahbub that was recently published. They provide a list of questions that need to be researched. I think that's a very good resource that somebody should look at and use those questions to guide their research. They provide a historical overview of the field, and then they also look at different methodological approaches that have been taken to study the issue of native and non-native speakerism and what needs to be done in the future. So that list of questions is really helpful for somebody who's interested in this topic.
To wrap up, it's clear that addressing these biases is crucial for creating a more inclusive and effective TESOL community. Thank you, Dr. Kashif Reza, for sharing such valuable insights. Thank you so much.
Thank you for having me.
That's a wrap on today's episode of Text to Task Simplifying Education. As always, thank you for tuning in. Don't forget to subscribe, leave a review, and share this episode with friends and colleagues. Until next time, keep learning and stay curious.